I had crossed the mile-long bridge and was sitting at the busy intersection of 3rd Street and Bridge Road waiting for the light when I decided to pull over and get a better look at the famous tree. You're not a very attractive tree. At maybe 60 years, it was tall, with an open crown and slender drooping branches. There were small broken twigs all around the lawn, likely the result of last night's rain and wind. People came from all over to visit this tree. Not for its fall foliage, which was an underwhelming pale yellow color. Not to sit in its shade in the hot July sun. The days of picnics and tire swings seemed behind it. People came from all over to see the large, whitish discoloration on the bark of the tree. Many called it a gift from God, a miracle. A decade earlier, no one saw the tree as a gift from God. As the real estate developers walked the 55-acre lot, the tree heard them say that the area was an eyesore. It needed to go. More housing was needed. And it was a great location for a commercial building. The tree felt danger. "Danger!" cried the tree to the others. What could they do? This wasn't a drought where they could reduce their water intake to ensure everyone could drink, or a pest invasion where they could pump out chemicals, making them less desirable. Time to make ourselves more desirable. The other trees and shrubs shook their foliage at the older tree dismissively. What do humans want that the tree could provide? It couldn't be a car or ice cream or a football game. It couldn't be a phone or a t-shirt. It couldn't be a song. The tree pondered this question until the snow was falling on the ground and its leaves were scattered to the icy winds. The tree heard human voices in joyful exuberance singing of a Virgin Mary and a baby Jesus. That is it, thought the tree. Maybe I can bring this joy to humans year-round. The tree would need a tattoo of sorts. It had to be big. Big enough to be seen by the passing traffic. It took all the tree's will to cause a discoloration from the base of its trunk to as high as one of its lower branches. Day by day, the woman's shape took form. The branch scar became the head of a child. The tree urged his family and friends to do the same. They shook their branches in merriment and got back to the business of being. The tree knew it had succeeded when the first woman noticed. She had kneeled in front of the tree and touched the image with her hand. "Madre de Dios," she had whispered, "I should tell others." The next day she came back with fake flowers and a prayer for her dying father. Soon after, others came, and the tree was declared a gift from God. The tree listened. "Help my daughter with her exam. Please don't let it be cancer. Protect my son from harm." With each petition, they brought offerings of metals, beads, and flowers. The tree stopped listening to the humans the day the chainsaws and bulldozers arrived. One by one, the tree was severed from those in its community as they fell. Day by day, the tree collapsed into its own world of loneliness and isolation. The tree had done it on purpose. Through the years, I'd watched the tree go from being a tree to becoming a shrine of sorts, the Virgin Mary tree of Polk City. It is even listed on a website called Roadside America. Aberration or aberration? Maybe both. It wasn't a species I knew, so I took a photo and texted it to a forester friend. "Sorry to bother you. I need to know what tree this is. Can you identify it?" He texted back immediately, "Hi, is this Jackie? It looks like a Siberian elm from the bark texture and the white discoloration. If it isn't Ames, I could swing by after work and confirm tomorrow. It isn't. It's in Polk City. It is the tree that was saved because people swear they see the Virgin Mary in the discoloration of the trunk. Wow. That would explain the flowers, I guess. Yes, people treat it like a pilgrimage. So, I guess we should paint the Virgin Mary on all Iowa trees? This is Curious Planet, and I am Jacqueline Comito. In 1996, Harvard professor Lawrence Buell suggested in his book, The Environmental Imagination, that the environmental crisis involved a crisis of the imagination, and that solutions depended on finding better ways of imagining nature and humanity's relationship to it. I can't remember the last time someone asked me to use my imagination. Maybe in kindergarten or early elementary. We don't usually hear the word when we're out talking to scientists or farmers. But here was a Harvard professor telling us that solving our environmental crisis is going to take using our imaginations. As an anthropologist, I was amazed to discover that new scholarship suggests that it is our imagining and improving brains and not language that makes humans human. Just a reminder, back in the 1950s, what made humans human was our ability to make and use tools, until Jane Goodall discovered that chimpanzees made and used tools. So then it was our ability to communicate through language and a complex system of symbols that made humans human. Language, reason, and deduction have often been seen as the drivers of human evolution. Imagining and dreams were diminished as less important and byproducts of evolution. Fun, but not very useful. Not so quick, argues Steve Asma in his 2017 book, The Evolution of Imagination. How do we learn anything apart from direct experience without imagination? Great question. Do I need to walk on thin ice to appreciate what sustained exposure to the cold water could do to my body? Do I need to touch a hot stove to know that it will burn me? Okay, I did need to do that. Most people don't. It is so obvious that we don't even see the ways we use our imagination to engage and interact with the world around us. Long before we could speak words, we connected to our environment through our bodies, our dreams, our memories, and our actions. Asma argues that this gave us an evolutionary advantage. As such, we are so entwined with our universe that it is difficult to know where one ends and the other begins. The universe forms us through our experiences of the natural world, and our inactive imaginations in turn shapes the universe. I want to suggest that imagination, properly understood, is one of the earliest human abilities, not a recent arrival, writes Asma. Thinking and communicating are vastly improved by language, it is true. But thinking with imagery, and even thinking with the body, must have preceded language by hundreds of thousands of years. Flying by the seat of our pants is not just some analogy to pre-linguistic communication. It is the thing itself. What is imagination and improvisation? Imagination comes from the Latin imaginare, to picture oneself. And improvisation originates from the Latin improvisus, which literally means unforeseen. In other words, picturing yourself in an unanticipated situation. Our brains can't help themselves. We begin to form associations and connections. We open ourselves up to alternatives and possibilities, and that guides our decision-making by playing them out in our mind. Sometimes we do this very quickly and have to respond right on the spot. Or as Asma put it, fly by the seat of our pants. That is exhilarating. It is. I often feel the most alive in those moments when I have to think on my feet, trust my intuition, and act. Perhaps Asma would say that it is in those moments that I feel most human. Humans seem at their most creative when faced with an unforeseen problem that they have limited time to solve. It is here when we rely the most on our oldest mental process, our imagination, with some help from our reasoning, and come up with something creative and effective that combine pre-existing ideas into something new. As psychology professor Luca Tateo wrote in his 2020 book, A Theory of Imagining, Knowing, and Understanding, that imagination is a mental process that can mediate between what is present and what is absent. It is a state that exists in the space between these two things. Too many of our environmental crises are anticipated, but don't seem immediate. As a result, there's no sense of urgency on the part of so many. Perhaps we also become so conditioned to the state of our world that it is hard to imagine anything else. We see what is present, but we can't imagine what is absent. Or we won't be able to imagine it until it's almost gone. When it comes to rivers, too many people in this world don't know what a healthy river is. They have never experienced it. Finally, we don't believe we can think or do impossible things, much like Lewis Carroll's Alice. "There's no use in trying," she said. "One cannot believe impossible things."
"I dare say you haven't had much practice," said the Queen. "When I was younger, I always did it for half an hour a day. I believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast."
When was the last time you believed 6 impossible things before breakfast? I recently shared some of my ideas about the imagination and how it could help us solve some of the environmental problems we are facing at the National Nonpoint Source Workshop in Minneapolis. Right after I finished my presentation, a scientist said to me, "Not all of us have creative people to come up with these ideas." I guess I could have done a better job with my talk. This man clearly hasn't had enough practice. Imagination is too important to be left to those we have designated as artists. Even Albert Einstein, the most revolutionary scientist of the 20th century, did his fair share of thinking the impossible. He acknowledged the power of imagining over reasoning in his work in a 1929 interview with the Saturday Evening Post. "I am enough of the artist to draw freely upon my imagination," he said. "Knowledge is limited. Imagination encircles the world." Is it time to paint the Virgin Mary on trees across Iowa? Perhaps even across the country?
Just across the mile-long bridge to the east on the south side of Polk City, at the busy intersection of 3rd Street and Bridge Road, a mystery grows on the trunk of a tree.
I've been bathed here 100 times and I've never even noticed that.
Do you come by here very often?
Probably about once every couple weeks. Never noticed it, though.
But many people have noticed it, and to them, the image is quite clear.
What do you see in that tree?
The Virgin Mary.
For the longest time, I couldn't decide if it looked like Mother Mary or Jesus.
Truth be told, it looks to me like the Mother Mary holding the baby Jesus.
I guess now that you look at it, it's kind of amazing now. Now I'm going to see it every time I come by here.
She's pretty good size. I'm about 5'10", so it looks to me like, well, she's 6 foot or better.
It makes me wonder how it got there. You know, was it struck by lightning? Did it just, was there a disease?
Whether it's an aberration or an apparition is in the eye of the beholder.
There has been like little shrines there off and on.
Well, the flowers sitting there, so I'd say that other people see the same thing that I see.
What a certain real estate company would like to see is the tree and the land it sits on sold. Divine intervention, anyone?